This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
As we head into the 9 o'clock hour of the world's biggest pregame show here on Sports Radio 610, 100 hours of Texans Chiefs coverage. We're dipping into some other NFL stories too. And Seth, this from Adam Schefter. As we await the DeAndre Hopkins extension, which Ian Rapoport was reporting last night as being imminent, there is another player. This one was actually making kind of a stink during training camp about his deal. Adam Schefter reporting the Saints and Pro Bowl running back Alvin Kamara are extremely close to a lucrative new extension that the two sides are hoping to finalize in the next few days. Per sources, the deal would silence any recent trade speculation and keep Kamara in New Orleans during the prime of his career. We know that the Saints are a team, Seth, that was in on Jadeveon Clowney, but they were trying to do some really weird cap gymnastics involving another team and a trade, like a sign-in trade, to try to get Clowney. So it'll be interesting to see how they try to fit Alvin Kamara in what's, I would imagine, going to be a deal that's in that maybe not McCaffrey neighborhood at the top of the running back market, but certainly in that next tier below, like I would say probably somewhere between Derrick Henry and Christian McCaffrey.
I wonder how he was feeling in these last 24 to 48 hours when there was all this talk that somehow the Saints, who don't have a whole lot of cap room, were going to move heaven and earth and try to renegotiate with 10 other guys to try to get Clowney in the building. I wonder what that would have meant for Kamara if they had actually pulled that off.
Yeah.
We might have had a more of an extended, I don't even know what you call it, because Kamara was MIA and then was maybe had a hamstring issue. Like, it was going to be one of these hold-ins. It could have gotten really ugly, I suppose, but now they got a, I wonder if them giving a deal is partly saying, like, okay, yeah, look, we know we were doing that, so we showed that we can do it.
Yeah.
Here you go.
Or I wonder if part of the reason why they were doing that stuff with Clowney is because they also knew a Kamara deal was coming down the pipe as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, the Kamara deal didn't pop up the day that Clowney signed with the Titans. You know, they knew, okay, Kamara's probably going to be this, so we're going to need this much for Clowney. Oh, it's too much. We'd rather just move forward with Kamara and enjoy Nashville, Clowney.
There was, by the way, and to add to all the just weird stuff with Jadeveon Clowney, the Ravens reportedly were going after Clowney in a sign and trade three-team deal, some kind of
with Jacksonville.
Something or other. Yeah, with Jacksonville and
imagine,
Cleveland, right?
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Well, no. New Orleans was going to work with Cleveland. Baltimore was going to work with Jacksonville, and Jacksonville was going to sign Clowney, give him a big bonus, and then trade him to Baltimore. Basically the same thing Cleveland and New Orleans were talking about doing, but with Baltimore and Jacksonville. Seth, can you imagine what the newswire would have looked like? Because newswire-wise, the story initially would have been Clowney signs with the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah.
You know, can you imagine, like, after all that, after being with Seattle and with the Texans, who were a playoff team, you're signing with the Jags, and then, of course, they would flip around and trade him to Baltimore right away.
You know, the weirdest thing about the Jaguars that I can't figure out this offseason was that they, for all this shedding that they've done, and they've gone like trying to get rid of everybody, at the very beginning of free agency, they signed the middle linebacker, Joe Schobert, which I'm still trying to reconcile. Like, why did you do that? At what point after that signing did you realize, all right, but then we're going to get rid of all of our other good players and it's all going to be all about the future? They're probably going to trade Joe Schobert at some point at this point.
I have an answer for you, because they probably overspent. If they're the Jags, they probably overspent on Joe Schobert. The answer is this. One, you have to spend X amount as an NFL team. You know, you can't just scale it all down and not spend like it's a baseball team. So you have to spend a certain amount. And two, if you're going to overspend, overspend on players who don't deserve it if you're trying to get Trevor Lawrence. You know, if we've got to spend up to a certain amount, we're going to spend on players who are not the best of players out there, and we're going to do our best to go 1-15 this year and get Trevor Lawrence. So that's my answer to that question. So if Alvin Kamara gets a deal, we know DeAndre Hopkins reportedly is close to getting a deal. This will have been a pretty big week for big money contract extensions to get handed out. We know Deshaun Watson's extension, 4 years, $160 million. There were others that got handed out too. Seth, I wanted to go through these and just go through which players, when they see these extensions, are kind of giving the side eye on Twitter or kind of going, you know, placing a call to their employer going, hey, you see what's going on over here, right? This guy. I think the obvious one with Deshaun Watson is Lamar Jackson. You know, Lamar Jackson is making strong notes right now as to what Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson are getting paid, because Lamar Jackson is going to be the one, he's going to be the next quarterback to break the bank next year. He's going to get huge money.
Yeah. And Lamar Jackson, I guess Lamar Jackson's big obstacle this year, aside from just going out and playing football, is there a blueprint for how to make Lamar Jackson uncomfortable? Yeah. Were the Titans able to do that? The Titans are a burgeoning defense, and I think they had the physical ability, like they had the actual tools to do what they needed to do, which is stuff up everything in the middle, make Lamar Jackson uncomfortable enough and have to make his, in the passing game, move to the perimeter. I think that the Ravens have spent a whole lot of time figuring out how to counteract that. I'd be surprised if Lamar Jackson isn't sitting on a big pile of money by this time next year.
Yeah, yeah, I think he probably, I don't know that anybody's getting Mahomes' deal, both good and bad reasons. I don't think any of that. That deal is going to be a unique outlier that sits off to the side. If you're Lamar Jackson, I would imagine Deshaun's deal is what you're hoping you can approach the Ravens as your floor. You won an MVP this past year. You put up another big year. You should be in line for a big pay raise like that. Keenan Allen got 4 years, $80 million on an extension. The same day Deshaun got his deal. Initially, my player who was doing the side eye was DeAndre Hopkins, but it looks like DeAndre Hopkins is about to get paid according to Ian Rapoport. DeAndre, so do you think DeAndre resets the market, Seth, when he gets a deal? Does DeAndre Hopkins, negotiating for himself, by the way, does he, like Laremy Tunsil, make himself the highest paid player at his position? And does he deserve to be the highest paid player?
I don't think
he
gets that. Deserve's got nothing to do with it. I think it's how much leverage do you have. Did Laremy Tunsil deserve to be the highest paid offensive tackle? No, but he had the leverage too. Like, his play didn't merit him being the highest paid offensive tackle. And DeAndre Hopkins has a better argument that his play would merit it. Does he have a whole lot of leverage? Yeah, because, well, he doesn't have as much leverage as Laremy Tunsil did, just because the Cardinals gave up almost nothing to get him. So if they wanted it to be uncomfortable for a little while, they could let it go. If I'm the Cardinals, this is what I say. I say, listen, I know you're not representing. Yeah, I know you don't have to pay an agent after all this. So how about we just give you what Julio Jones got minus agents' fees?
You saying we'll like, no, let's split the commission like you see real estate agents do sometimes?
Yeah.
Let's take the 4% and just split it. How about you just give us a 2% discount? We split the commission that you would have had to pay an agent. How's that sound, DeAndre? Couple other interesting ones, Seth, on the defensive side of the ball. Tre'Davious White, the cornerback for the Buffalo Bills, got 4 years, $70 million on an extension, which I believe is the highest average annual value. It's right there with Byron Jones' deal that he signed with the Dolphins. I would imagine that Jalen Ramsey right now is probably dialing up the Rams saying, hey, you may want to get this deal done because Tre'Davious White and Byron Jones are setting the floor for me. And unlike DeAndre Hopkins, as you just pointed out, Ramsey does have some Tunsilian leverage over the Los Angeles Rams because they did trade two first-round picks.
Right. The Rams, I mean, the Rams are getting, I guess, what you are accorded or afforded, I don't know, if you go to a Super Bowl. It's that they're kind of getting a free pass on doing a lot of the exact same things that Bill O'Brien has done with almost none of the scrutiny.
Yeah.
They traded two first-round picks for Ramsey without giving a contract first, and nobody said a peep about it. Whereas with Bill O'Brien, it was, oh my gosh, can you believe they traded for Laremy Tunsil and they didn't have a contract
Seth,
in place?
Even after they signed Tunsil to a contract that was a normal market contract, like the top of market, added to his fifth-year option, reasonable deal for a franchise left tackle. They were still like, well, he still should have signed him as soon as they traded for him. You know, like
yeah.
Almost as if people, they didn't like being proven wrong in that. But you're right. The Rams aren't getting any criticism over this. And meanwhile, Ramsey just sits and watches the market go up and up and up and up.
I think the Rams pay Jalen Ramsey, and at least part of it is the reason I believe that is that's one of the reasons that they made another move that frankly didn't get enough scrutiny is that they shipped Brandon Cooks out while having to absorb a record amount of dead money on his contract. Was it $22 million?
It was more than the Steelers absorbed to get rid of Antonio Brown.
Yeah.
Cooks is like the opposite of Antonio Brown as far as a citizen goes.
So, and I think part of that was they were super aggressive trying to win a Super Bowl. And I think that as long as you actually get to a Super Bowl, I think people say, all right, well, look, it made sense. I guess with – and that's what it'll be with O'Brien. Like, look, if O'Brien makes it to a Super Bowl sometime this year or next year, for the most part, everybody will forget all the things that they said 2 years ago. They'll be claiming that, like, well, no, I knew what he was doing all along. It was a smart move. But you gotta get to that point before they – you know, O'Brien – like, Bill Belichick, do you realize what a stupid move it was to trade a second-round pick for Mohamed Sanu? That was one of the dumbest moves I've seen in the NFL in the last 5 years. But he's Bill freaking Belichick. What are you going to say?
Six Super Bowls.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it. Andre Johnson is going to be on the Texans Players Show tonight at 6 p.m. I am really, really looking forward to hearing what Andre Johnson has to say about what this new-look Texans offense is going to look like. In his mind, he was somebody who was close to DeAndre Hopkins, a teammate of DeAndre. He coached DeAndre here, you know, working with the wide receivers last year. It's going to be a different-looking passing attack with all that speed. The greatest player, possibly, in the history of this franchise, he and J.J. Watt neck and neck. Certainly the greatest receiver in the history of this franchise, he and Hopkins. We'll hear from Andre Johnson tonight on the Players Show at 6 p.m. here on Sports Radio 610 as we roll on with the world's biggest pregame show. 100 hours of Texans-Chiefs coverage. Download the Radio.com app to stick with us through all of it. Maybe Bill O'Brien giving up play calling isn't nearly the big deal we're making it out to be. We'll explain why next. 58 hours on the nose to the kickoff of the NFL season. It's going to take place right here on Sports Radio 610. The Texans play here. It's the world's biggest pregame show. We are embedded right now in 100 hours of Texans-Chiefs coverage. Tim Kelly, the new play caller, second-year offensive coordinator, first-year play caller, met with the media earlier this week and was asked a question that elicited a response where I think a lot of people went, okay. When did you find out that you were going to be the one calling plays in the 2020 season?
Yeah, no, I found out when you guys found out at the combine. I was in my hotel room in Indy when he came out and made that public, and I was really excited. My phone started to blow up. I thought something was wrong, or I thought I was missing a meeting because all of a sudden you get all these, you know, floods of text messages, and I was like, oh no, what am I missing? So, I was really excited, and then immediately my mind kind of went to like, okay, how do I get ready to do this? How do I get ready to put Deshaun in the best position possible and to try to put this team in the best position to win as many games as possible?
I'm just glad his first response was, oh, great, great. Typical O'Brien,
yeah.
Putting more on my plate.
Right.
Like
right.
He sounded like he was pretty genuinely excited.
I really feel like he kind of pressured me into this by going public in the media with it before running it by me.
Hey, Bill, thanks, you know, but, you know, maybe next time, yeah, ask first.
So let me ask
like,
you.
This is exactly like the time, Sean, that I'd saved up my money from working on the farm in the summer.
Yeah.
And I was going to take my high school girlfriend to Red Lobster as a surprise.
Right.
But to Kadida Duper, I had told her we were just going to go to Taco Bell on the way to a movie. So when we showed up to Red Lobster, she was disappointed that we weren't going to Taco Bell.
You didn't come through on your promise.
Yeah, like I'd gotten, you know, she's like, well, I mean, I was excited about Taco
Bell.
She was
ready for a chalupa.
Yeah, and you might think like, hey, cool, Seth, like she's not into money. Oh, like, no, she was. She was into being a pain in the ass. She was into being an extreme pain in the ass.
Right.
So I think the moral of the story is here that Bill O'Brien, not the pain in the ass, or excuse me, Tim Kelly, not the pain in the ass that my high school
girlfriend
was.
That's right. He's cool with Red Lobster or Taco Bell. It doesn't matter.
Yes.
He just wants a good meal. He wants a good meal of play calling is what he wants. So Seth, are we making – well, let me ask you this after we play this cut from Bill O'Brien about play calling. Bill O'Brien was asked yesterday, how will it feel? What changes now? How does it feel not calling the plays in these games?
I'll be involved. I mean, I think and John, I understand the question, and you know, I think that's type of stuff. You know, I don't see that as that big of a deal. I mean, I'm still involved, and you know, I'm not going to sit there like a church mouse, you know, during a game. So I'll be involved in, you know, in all three phases relative to what's being called. So I don't really see that as, you know, a huge deal.
Not going to sit there like a church mouse, Seth. Yeah, yeah.
Boy, you really can't hear the S in that audio. In that drop that you suck to.
You can't, right.
Sean, in the press conference yesterday, I had a great follow-up to that, but it was like that was one of his last quotes before they started taking questions from the Kansas City.
It was.
I genuinely wanted to know. I was going to say, Coach, could you tell us at which points in your life you are a dormouse?
Yeah.
Because I would imagine, I always like thinking about head football coaches in different situations, like when they're at the doctor's office or something, where all of a sudden they can't boss everybody around. They're probably, you know, like in church talking to the pastor or something. There's got to be some moments where Nick Saban gets treated like, you know, like, no, listen, I'm in charge here, buddy.
Yeah, the word docile and Bill O'Brien do not collide in the same sentence for me. I'm sorry.
I was. Now, are you a little nervous about that at all? Because the way O'Brien said that, where he said he's not going to be a dormouse, I know what he's saying, that, look, he's going to speak up and he's got the ultimate say. But are you worried that he's going to meddle too much, perhaps?
And I'm actually less worried about it than I think some are, because I do think he's got really great respect for Tim Kelly and Tim Kelly's intelligence level. I have no idea if he's accurate on his assessment of Tim Kelly. None of us do. We're not in the building over there. But people seem to like Tim Kelly. Deshaun seems to really like Tim Kelly. Tim Kelly's been a graduate assistant for O'Brien, and he's managed to stick with him. Tim Kelly's managed to stick with a guy who is not afraid to swap things out that aren't working. And he's managed to stick with him through 9 years at both the collegiate and NFL levels at various different assignments along the way. And I think this offense, Seth, just has too many good players where it's going to feel like something that needs to be meddled with. I think if O'Brien were calling the plays, it was going to be a good offense. I'm enthused about Kelly calling the plays just because it's some new blood. So I'm not that worried about it. And I think the interesting thing about O'Brien there making it out like it's not that big a deal that Tim Kelly's calling plays is the way that Tim Kelly found out would seem to be indicative of that O'Brien just sort of drops it in the middle of a press conference without telling Tim Kelly first would seem to indicate to O'Brien that it's not as big a deal as we're all making it out to be. Do you think it's not that big a deal? I mean, I do feel like it's kind of a big deal. I just don't feel like O'Brien's going to meddle is all.
I think it's a big deal. Yeah. The thing that I would be concerned about was the possibility that last year that Tim Kelly was nominally the offensive coordinator, but that Bill O'Brien would kind of tweak and change things within the last 48 hours of a game that left Deshaun Watson, Tim Kelly, and Bill O'Brien not on the same page. That's what I worry about. So just because now Deshaun Watson expects not – like last year, Deshaun Watson himself said that he wished he would have had more face time with the offensive coordinator, Bill O'Brien, last year.
Yeah.
You know, he actually said that publicly. That's kind of a big deal. And yet Bill O'Brien still had obviously a lot of control over it. So, yeah, until I see it, until it's genuinely a better passing office. Because remember, when teams have let a top 10 wide receiver walk off their team in the past two decades, it very rarely has resulted in a better passing offense the next year. So there's a lot of pressure on Bill O'Brien and Tim Kelly to actually, I don't care what their tools are, it's going to be hard to make this a better passing offense.
Yeah. Tim Kelly talked about playing tempo in a game. So Tim Kelly and how we judge him is going to be, we're going to judge him on the decisions that he makes, both play to play as well as the general strategy entering a game. Seth, I think this concerned you when he said this the other day. He was asked, Tim Kelly was, about playing up-tempo against the Kansas City Chiefs. Here's what he had to say.
Playing with tempo is something that you know, we've always really pride ourselves on here, being able to do that. And so really, if that's gonna put us in the best position to win the game, then absolutely. So really, you know, we're going to – you know, like we've talked about the snap counts and things like that over the past couple of weeks, we're going to make sure that we're preparing our guys to be, you know, to be ready to go if we have to go, or to be ready to play from the huddle if we have to play from the huddle.
All right, Seth, what advice would you give to Tim Kelly if he wanted to play up-tempo against the Kansas City Chiefs on Thursday?
Well, I think there was – remember the last Kansas City game, there were times in the fourth quarter where you felt like, why the hell are they taking their time? If it's not in a two-minute drill, but it's even as time is a priority or is imperative, then you need to act with more urgency. Sometimes at the end of halves, they don't feel like they act with urgency. As far as this notion that somehow the Texans need to come out and go no huddle and up tempo all the time, it just doesn't work in the NFL. And I honestly think that a lot of people watch college football, and that's their idea of up tempo football. So when they see their NFL team play, they wonder, why aren't they doing this enough? It's just harder to do in the NFL. One of the reasons is there are rules change, there are rules differences, but also it puts so much pressure on the defense. The number one team in terms of tempo last year was the Philadelphia Eagles. They ran 68 plays per game. That would have made them the 77th fastest NCAA football team.
Wow.
It's just different. It would have made them a middle of the pack. So the fastest team in the NFL is middle of the pack in college football.
Right.
So I think in your mind, don't ever expect the NFL teams to go out Chip Kelly style and operate like that, because it just puts too much pressure on the defense. Now, there are specific times in games where, yeah, I wish they would act with more urgency, and I think that's something that's partly on Deshaun Watson. I think him really being able to feel and operate the offense at a high speed is something that's probably going to improve this year. There are a lot of – I don't care how much people talk about how O'Brien scaled the playbook back and what have you. There are complex elements to that offense, no matter how few plays there are in the playbook, and it takes time for a quarterback to get really good at operating it with tempo. I think Deshaun Watson is better at that this year.
I'm pretty excited that we're coming off of this conversation into talking to Mike Martz, who was both the offensive coordinator and eventually the head coach for the greatest show on turf. We're going to talk to him in the next segment. He is part of a podcast, the Run It Again podcast, with Ron Pitts of Fox. We're going to talk to former Rams head coach. Got to a Super Bowl with the Rams, was the OC for a team that won a Super Bowl in St. Louis. Mike Martz will join us in the next segment as we roll on with the world's biggest pregame show, the Texans and the Chiefs. We're in the midst of 100 hours of coverage, of buildup to the Chiefs and the Texans on Thursday here on Sports Radio 610. Mike Martz next. All right, welcome back. It is the world's biggest pregame show. 100 hours of Texans and Chiefs coverage here. Sean Pendergast, original Houston Texan, Seth Payne, and of course, we will have coverage throughout the day, throughout the next few days, leading up to the kickoff of the Texans and the Chiefs on Thursday night, right here on Sports Radio 610. Seth Payne and I will have the pregame for you. Clint Sterner and I will have the postgame for you. Should be a fun day as we kick off NFL football. I want to play a cut here before we get to Mike Martz, the former head coach of the greatest show on turf, because LeBron James, of all things, LeBron James compared the Houston Rockets after game one of their series. He made a cross-sport comparison with football. Here's what LeBron James had to say about the very speedy Houston Rockets.
Kind of like, in the early 2000s when the St. Louis Rams, the greatest show on turf, people always say how they scout them. But until they got on the field and they seen Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt and Marshall Faulk and Oz Akeem and all those guys, and it was like, okay, we need to play them again, because there's no way you can simulate that speed. Getting out on the floor and having a game one give you a good feel for it.
I love LeBron's recall on Oz Akeem right there.
At first I was like, oh, that's nice. That's nice. And he pulled Oz Akeem out of his butt, and I was like, okay, this guy's done his homework.
That's impressive, yeah. And joining us
How old was LeBron at that point? Like 15 or 16 years old?
Yeah, he was in high school. Yeah, he came in the league in 2003. Joining us right now was the former offensive coordinator and head coach for that iconic greatest show on turf offense with the Rams, Mike Martz, joining us on the show. He has a podcast with Fox's Ron Pitts called the Run It Again podcast. Coach, it's great to have you on the show. What goes through your mind when you hear a cross-sport comparison like that from one of the greatest basketball players of all time?
Well, good morning, man. Thanks for having me. Well, that's quite an honor, actually. That's pretty cool, I'd say.
I thought about that, though, Mike, and as I recall, I believe you guys had lost to the Tennessee Titans in the regular season that year. And them getting a look at you didn't actually give them any kind of advantage in the Super Bowl.
It's always hard to play a team during the season, and and then beat them in the postseason. It's just something about it. It's really one of the more difficult things I think to do in the NFL. We played them. They were beating us 21-0 at halftime, I think. Or maybe it was 28-0. I don't remember. But we came back and pulled within 3 points and kicking a field goal at the end of the game. They hit the kicker and knocked the ball out. But it was a really, really a close game. So we knew playing them again is going to be another one of those Titanics. But those are hard things to do, to beat a team during the season and then beat them in the playoffs.
Mike March joining us on Sports Radio 610. Mike, I think when teams load up on speed at wide receiver, especially when they've got a quarterback like Deshaun Watson, I think people immediately invoke, well, it's like the greatest show on turf, as if it's just, well, just go get a lot of speed and it's the greatest show on turf. I am curious specifically with the Texans. We know that they did something a little counterintuitive in that they traded one of the best receivers in football, but swapped him out and now have replaced him with some much speedier wide receivers with Brandon Cooks and Randall Cobb. Kenny Stills and Will Fuller were already here. I guess just your general thoughts on Deshaun Watson pulling the trigger on an offense like this as somebody who coached an offense with all kinds of speed like that. What are your thoughts on what Bill O'Brien is trying to accomplish here?
I think it's a good move. I really do. I think increasing your speed in numbers, particularly. I'm a big Cobb fan. I loved him when he came out and all the different things he can do with the football. It does remind me of Ozzie King a little bit, but I just think that the more ways you can spread that ball around the speed instead of isolating a player, just makes you much more versatile and much more difficult for the defense to deal with. Speed always is hard for defense. Always. Speed trumps size. And if I had a 5'9", 10 flat 100 meter guy, I'd much rather have him than a 6'3", guy that with average speed. You can go by people and put them on their heels.
When we look at the Kansas City Chiefs and with under Andy Reid specifically, Andy Reid has only lost one opening game, and he's done that with a couple of different quarterbacks. What are the wrinkles or what are the things he does differently perhaps in the first week that give him an advantage above and beyond just being a good football team?
You know, I think we had a pretty good record as well. I don't know that we lost but one in maybe 6 or 7 years there. I think what we did, probably what he does, in the off season, you spend a lot of time on that first game, especially because you don't know, especially if there's been changes. But you want to make sure you come out of the blocks in that opener nice and strong for the players. It kind of sets the tone for the season. I really have always felt that opening game is probably the most critical game of the season.
Mike March, Jordan. Oh, sorry.
And I think he does that. I think he really emphasizes that. I really do. I think they spend a lot of time on that.
Sorry, I didn't mean to jump in on you there, Coach. Mike March joining us here on Sports Radio 610. Mike, the other thing, the other real big key element for that greatest show on turf offense was Marshall Faulk at the running back position. The Texans are making a bet on David Johnson being, I think, something similar to that, where he gets all kinds of touches. He catches the ball out of the backfield. Bill O'Brien has called him an excellent three-down back. What does a dynamic back like that, that you don't have to take off of the field, do for an offense?
You know, when you change personnel defensively, they see that, of course, on the other side. There's certain limitations. There's certain things you do with some backs that you don't do with others for a lot of teams. Now, we were never that way. And to have a guy that can do anything, that is good in protection pickup, he can pound it inside, and a terrific receiver, you can move him around. The flexibility and the threat to the defense, that they've got to cover the whole field, so to speak. And it goes along with what they're doing with the wide receivers, the multiplicity, the speed, the making the defense accountable for all of those guys. They're just not pigeons out there. You know what I mean? They can get the ball and do something with it. And with that threat, and knowing that that's a threat, it makes the defense really look hard at how they're going to approach that game. It really manages their pressures. They're less apt to pressure you and play more of a vanilla defense, which is what we always try to get guys into.
You know, you had mentioned pass protection, which I know a lot of people don't typically talk about that with running backs, and yet coaches, I know, care a whole lot about it. And Marshall Faulk was damn near a savant at picking up blitzes and pass protection. So I guess my question for the Chiefs would be, they have this rookie, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who's very exciting. I think he's going to be a good pro, but with no preseason games, with no practices against other teams, how much can you really rely on a rookie back there in week one in pass protection? Okay, I got, that sounds like an answer.
You know how big Steven Jackson was, right? Well, his rookie season, we're playing Atlanta, and a safety blitz came off the corner. You know, Steven at the time was about 235. What is he, 6'1", whatever he is. And here comes this little safety off the corner, and he steps up, and he's going to block him, and he just gets rocked back into the quarterback, and the safety goes right over him for a sack. And that was his first chance of picking up a blitz live in a real game, you know, other than preseason games. It's not the same even. So it's going to be an eye-opener for him. He's going to end up looking out his ear hole a couple times before he gets it right. But you have to step up and attack them. You can't set and catch it and do some of those things that perhaps he did in college. It's going to be an eye-opener. It's going to be hard for him at first.
We're speaking with Mike Martz. You can listen to him on his Run It Again podcast with Fox's Ron Pitts. That's the Run It Again podcast. I've got one more question for you, Coach. If you could give just one key for the Texans to focus in on this week, what would it be?
Well, their secondary. Their secondary just has been inconsistent. I do think that, you know, that's their Achilles heel at this point. I know that defensively, Kansas City's bolstered themselves a little bit. And I think the only thing at this point that is really going to slow you guys down is being able to shore up the secondary. I think that's a sore spot at this point.
Yeah. Darian Conley going on the injured reserve list yesterday certainly didn't help that. Mike Martz, the Super Bowl winning offensive coordinator, got to a Super Bowl as a head coach as well. Those greatest show on turf Rams teams, one of the iconic teams in the history of the NFL. Mike Martz joining us again, the Run It Again podcast with Fox's Ron Pitts. Are you enjoying the podcasting, Coach?
It's a lot of fun. It allows me to give an unfiltered opinion on things that, and kind of maybe a different perspective than what you normally get out there. So we don't hold back on it. You know, we can give our opinion, and a coach's and a player's perspective. Ron has a different perspective, too, that maybe what's out there right now, you don't quite get the same kind of view of things. So we try to offer something a little different.
Really good stuff. Well, that Steven Jackson story you just told us, that's the type of stuff that makes you guys unique. The players and the coaches can tell those stories that are real-life examples. That's just it's really good stuff that can't be duplicated. So good luck with the podcast. We hope to do it again with you soon, Coach. Really enjoy the insight and enjoy the game this Thursday.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you. Mike Martz joining us here on Sports Radio 610. Interesting observations on offense. There's a lot of elements that the Texans are trying to do that were in those offenses that they ran in St. Louis back in the day.
Yeah, And I guess that's the one thing I've been trying to, because, you know, I've been very, very skeptical of the whole David Johnson experiment.
Yep.
There is, nobody ever wants to hear this. It's kind of like talking about Kevin Walter being a good route runner. Nobody ever wanted to hear about that, even though it was genuinely true. I think the pass protection from a running back is way more important than people realize. And David Johnson is very good in pass protection.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things I'm telling myself as I try to stop seething about paying him all that guaranteed money.
Were you okay with the key to the game that Mike Martz gave you that you can now use as one of the celebrity keys to the game that you went and got all by yourself?
I don't know if we can use that. That was more just like of his just even-handed assessment of what the situation was. That sounded more like of a key to not getting your ass kicked.
I think you underestimate our boss's ability to take any piece of audio and turn it into something that's usable on the air.
Okay.
I'm going to guess he's going to find a way to use that is my hunch. Who knows? He may find something from that interview that could be construed as a key to the game as well. So,
and then I'll get credit in the $50 gift card.
That's right. That's right. Yep. All right. That was Mike Martz. We appreciate him joining us on the show. I want to mention here, we are it's the world's biggest pregame show. We've mentioned that several times, and we will continue to as we build up to Thursday. We're in the middle of 100 hours of coverage for the Texans and the Chiefs, a game that you will hear Thursday night here on Sports Radio 610. We are looking to have the biggest impact possible on the Houston community. And through the end of the week, we're teaming up with the Barbara Bush Houston Literacy Foundation and their My Home Library campaign, because books are a luxury. Many families can't afford books for their kids, to the point where there's one book for every 300 low-income households in Houston. Not 300 kids, 300 households in Houston. And Neil Bush, who is the fourth of the six Bush children, fourth of the six children of George H.W. Bush and Barbara Bush, did an interview recently and talked about why early literacy is important.
Early literacy is important because you can't possibly realize your fullest God-given potential as a youth or even as an adult if you can't read, if you're not literate. And unfortunately, our school system and societal systems are structured in such a way that low-income people in particular have difficulty, having books that they're able to access in their homes. They're not hearing the same level and same numbers of vocabulary words. They're behind in terms of access to resources. And so we need to double down in the Houston community to crack the intergenerational issue of poverty by starting with the intergenerational issue of low literacy.
All right, so here's what we're trying to fix. I mentioned one out of every 300 low-income households in Houston, one out of four Houston third graders do not meet reading standards. 61% of low-income families have no books in their homes. Texas ranks 50th among states in percentage of adults with a high school education, and 60% of Houston's kids enter kindergarten without the reading skills that they need. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that they don't have books in their home. So this is the Barbara Bush Houston Literacy Foundation's My Home Library campaign. Neil Bush talked about what is the My Home Library campaign.
The My Home Library program is really vital and is proving to be of great impact in our community. The sad reality is that 61% of low-income kids have zero books at home. If we can put books into the hands of kids so that they can take these books that they select, that they're intrinsically motivated to want to read, it puts the parent in the driver's seat in helping them with their education. It creates interest in literacy that the kid has intrinsically that wasn't there before. And studies show that kids that have books at their fingertips are more likely to develop interest in literacy and develop literacy skills early in life. And it is so vital.
All right. So here's what we are asking you to do today and throughout the rest of the week. You can make a big difference in changing those numbers. A $30 donation provides a child with six books that they get to choose from their wish list. So they're not just getting handed six books. They get to pick six books that they're interested in reading. It's tax deductible. Here's how you contribute. And it's $30 would be great. Whatever you can give is awesome. HTX Reads, R-E-A-D-S, HTX Reads, text that to 41444 to make your donation of any size. That's HTX Reads to 41444. And a big thank you for making a big difference in our community. And we'll continue to give this out throughout the week. The Barbara Bush Foundation, or the Barbara Bush Houston Literacy Foundation and Sports Radio 610. Seth, those are daunting numbers, man.
No, it is. But it is also, they're daunting numbers, but it's important to point out how much of a difference it means just having books in the house and having parents read to their kids. And sometimes it is it's a matter of kind of jump in the middle and change course, just with very, very little simple things like that. Because a lot of parents weren't read to when they were kids, and they don't really think to read to their kids. But it makes a huge, huge difference at school.
Yeah, books are a bit of a lost art, man. And if some people it's the choosing to read, but for these kids, there's probably a ton of them that would love to read, but they just can't afford to have books in the home.
And then they just never realize, they just don't. There's some very basic things that happen when you read the same. The great thing about kids is they read the same book like 4,000 times.
Yeah.
They just read it over and over and over again.
So did you have one that you read over and over again? Mine was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
I read Charlie and the Chocolate Factory a bunch of times.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. One of those, the Hardy Boys. I had like old Hardy Boys books that my uncle had. So I read a bunch
books.
Of those.
Yeah. Good stuff. All right. So text HTX Reads to 41444 and you can be part of that campaign. All right. So a lot going on here over the next few days. I want to mention again, Andre Johnson tonight, 6 o'clock on the Players Show. That'll be really interesting to hear. I'm really anxious to hear Andre Johnson's thoughts on what the Texans are trying to do offensively and what Bill O'Brien's done with the roster. He was in the locker room with these guys last year. He was on the staff last year, and he's tight with DeAndre Hopkins. What's he going to say tonight on the Players Show? 9 o'clock tonight. It is a It is a Texans radio special presentation. The Texans and the Bills, commercial-free. The playoff win over the Bills last year, commercial-free. I want to make one other quick mention. I know a lot of billboarding going on here right now, but football is finally back, and your picks could be worth $10,000 with the Rocket Mortgage 2020 Pro Football Pick'em. You can sign up today, radio.com/picks. Just pick the winner of each week's games. There's no point spreads. There's no lineups like Daily Fantasy. Totally free to enter. You pick the most games right throughout the season, you could win 10 grand. And you can see my picks on the site, so you can compete with me. And I'm looking forward to getting my picks in this week. We'll see how I do. No spreads, so I feel pretty good about my. I feel pretty good about being able to pick just the winners of these games. But there's $1,000 up for grabs each week. $10,000 at the end of the season. The Rocket Mortgage 2020 Pro Football Pick'em. Again, the website for that, radio.com/picks. So there you go.
All right. One more time, somebody is trying to wanted to know where to go for the information on social media.
For the Barbara Bush Literacy Foundation, text HTX reads to 41444. So text HTX reads to 41444. All right, Seth, I think we are about out of time. That was a fun show.
We are. Yeah. Antibodies to you. Apologies to the person from Kansas City who was listening to Sports Radio 610 in Kansas City and texted us angrily talking about whatever the hell they were talking about.
Yeah, they got to fix that.
We always get, once a show, I get somebody who's like, I can't believe you guys feel this way about the coronavirus. Right. And I'm like, I haven't talked about the coronavirus in at least
3 days. Why is this person so angry about the Royals? Yeah. We don't care about the Royals.
Yeah.
All right. Seth, antibodies, T-cells to you. I will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m., my friend.
Good day, sir.
All right, good day to you as well. All right. In the Loop is up next. Ben Gary, nice job. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig. They are up next. They are in the Loop. We will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. as we continue with the world's biggest pregame show, 100 hours, Texans and Chiefs. This is fun, all leading up to Thursday night. Keep it right here on Sports Radio 610 all day long. We'll see you tomorrow at 6 a.m., everybody.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.